From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, well, a push for a new state, the state of Jefferson. But here's what's happening. Could there be more trouble in the Middle East? Iran dispatched a destroyer and another naval ship to the waters off of Yemen, raising the stakes amid a Saudi-led air campaign targeting Iranian-backed Shiite rebels fighting forces loyal to the country's embattled president. Now, the Iranian maneuver came as the U.S. deepened its support for the Saudi-led coalition, boosting weapons supplies and intelligence sharing, and carrying out the first U.S. aerial refueling mission of a coalition fighter jet. So we'll see what happens there. The U.S. military command that scans North America's skies for enemy missiles and aircraft plans to move its communications gear to a Cold War-era mountain bunker. The shift to the Cheyenne Mountain Base in Colorado is designed, they say, to safeguard the command's sensitive sensors and servers from potential electromagnetic pulse attacks, something we've been talking on this program about for at least 2 years. The man accused of bombing the Boston Marathon with his brother in 2013 has been found guilty of all 30 charges that he faced, many of which may carry the death penalty. The jury in Massachusetts will now decide what the sentence of the 21-year-old will be. Three people were killed and more than 260 injured when the bombs exploded at the finish line back in April of 2013. Well, from photos of that incredibly fit friend to a new baby announcement and vacation gloats, Facebook can sometimes be a source of anxiety and envy. And now a new study reveals the social media site could lead to symptoms of depression. University of Houston researchers found that Facebook users felt depressed when comparing themselves to others on the site. So we've got to check in with Dr. Peter Breggin, our resident psychiatrist, on this. Peter, you had been mentioning this a couple weeks ago, that there is a lot of envy there on some of these social networks, and a study backs you.
Well, yeah, the title of the study is interesting. It's called Seeing Everyone Else's Highlight Reel. Yeah, George, I really think that it's an opportunity for people when they feel jealous to ask themselves, what do they need to do about their lives? I mean, we all feel some jealousy.
Yes.
I confess to going on Amazon.com and comparing how my books are doing to someone else's books.
Yeah, but you don't get jealous, do you?
Well, sure I do.
Uh-huh. You need a psychiatrist, Peter.
Why is so-and-so doing better than I am with his sales? But listen, when you do that, then you've got to start just asking questions about yourself. What do I want to do? Do I want to write different books? Do I want a different job? Do I want to work harder? Do I want to work as hard as that other person may be working? Do I want to sell my, do I want to not go on the same tough ethics that I use on myself? Because I know that other person with the best salary is probably not writing as ethically as I am. I mean, you ask yourself. So folks, it's just really important. When you feel jealousy, look into your own heart and say, what do I really want to do? Why am I envious of another person? What do I think I'm missing out on in life? And I think ultimately it comes down to, you know, living ethically, living by principles, living by love, and knowing that you don't necessarily get the gold ring. You get to live the way you believe in living.
One of Peter's books is called Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety. Peter, thank you so much. Listen to this. A Florida woman is facing a felony animal abuse charge for killing her boyfriend's goldfish by pouring bleach into the tank. She's 32 years old. Who would do such a thing? A man with a fatal medical condition is set to become the first person to undergo a head transplant and hopes that it could be as soon as next year. Valery Spadarovnov says he's ready to put his trust in a controversial surgeon, Dr. Sergio Canavero, who's been on our program, who claims that he can cut off his head and attach it to a healthy body. Well, I hope he's right. The formation of the moon has long remained a mystery, but new studies support the theory that the moon was formed from the debris left from a collision between the newborn Earth and a Mars-sized rock with a veneer of meteorites coating both afterward. Now, Earth was born about 4.5 billion years ago, and scientists think the moon arose a short time later. The leading explanation for the moon's origin, known as the giant impact hypothesis, was first proposed in the 1970s. It suggests the moon resulted from the collision of two protoplanets, or embryonic worlds. One of those was just forming, good old Earth. The other was a Mars-sized object called Theia. The moon then coalesced from the debris. An amazing story. Check in with the author, though, of many great books, including, of course, the history, NASA, the history of science and space and everything else. Mike, how many books do you have out there now, Mike Bira?
Actually, I'll have six at the end of next week, I think. I've got Ancient Aliens and Secret Societies coming out.
And Hidden History you wrote with our old buddy Richard C.
Of course.
So that's good. But anyways, a quick question about this formation. Zachariah Sitchin, when he wrote his Earth Chronicles in The 12th Planet, talked about a collision with Earth that spun off the moon, and here we are, science now backing that up.
Well, at least, you know, scientific models backing that up. There is quite a bit of controversy about this, of course, because the reality is that they've done some tests on actual moon dust, moon rocks, and the Earth, and they basically found out that the Earth and the moon are made of the same thing, and there does not appear to be any elements from a third body involved. So that kind of implies that the Earth and the moon were at least one, at one time one, and it kind of supports our old friend Dr. Tom Van Flanders' theory that the moon was fissioned off from the Earth.
This was a wild, wild weekend, to be sure. Talking about planets, Planet X is Nibiru right around the corner. Bob Fletcher back on Coast to Coast in just a moment. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. For the next couple hours, you're going to hear a very strange story. Bob Fletcher back with us. Now, Bob has many hats. He's been an entrepreneur, a consultant, a manufacturer. He merged his small toy manufacturing business with a corporation that ended up being a supplier of weapons to U.S. intelligence agencies worldwide. I wonder what kind of toys they sold. The merger placed Bob in a position of becoming then a federal witness and led him to permanently becoming an investigative researcher chasing government corruption. Bob, what a series of careers for you.
Yes, as a matter of fact, good evening, George. It's great to be back again just to talk for a bit. Yes, as a matter of fact, and as I move into older age, so to speak. I don't know a good way to put that. I'm not terribly excited about that part of my life.
Nobody is.
But yes, and that's it's amazing. When I look back, my life had been very extraordinary from the time I was a youngster, and I was involved with the two different Broadway shows by the time I was 12, and then I just a multitude of amazing careers. My first job, when I was graduated high school, my first job in 5-6 days after graduating, I was in South America working for Life magazine, and did that briefly until I had to return back to the country because of the death of my mother at that time. But my life has bounced around into and out of amazing adventures. It's really been crazy, and the craziest of all of it, and my lawyer once said to me, a lady friend for about 35 years, she said, "You know, you've touched history many, many times in your life." And I started thinking back, and we don't have time. I don't want to waste time talking about all these extraordinary events, but they really have. It's been an amazing life. And as you mentioned, what happened, I was in I've been in several businesses of my own, mm-hmm. besides working for several major corporations during different parts of my life. But when I was in one of my businesses, which was a toy business, as laid back and non-political and non-exciting kind of a thing, I guess. Most excitement was bringing some entertainment to youngsters with our toys. And son of a gun, if the corrupted government didn't send one of their guys in, unknown to myself, heading up a corporation that had, in fact, been involved for so many years supplying, their legal weapons. It depends on how you look at it, I guess. But weapons for all the little wars that the intelligence agencies of our country are constantly generating. And one thing led to another. I merged with the company and then found out what was going on. And it was at the very beginning around 1986, that period of time, when the Iran-Contras, that was hitting the fan, as they say.
Sure.
And I ended up being a sworn federal witness involved with all of these characters that were delivering weapons around the globe and swapping out narcotics, using our air bases as the place to which the narcotics were being flown to, et cetera, et cetera. And then from that point forward, because I had, by being sitting in the middle of this central intelligence operation out of my toy company, literally outside of Atlanta, Georgia in the 80s, I met all these military generals and intelligence agents and all of these people, sat right in on meetings, how they put together artificial paperwork for helicopters, aircraft, machine guns, big weapons, small weapons, everything you could imagine, all the way up to and including Hellfire missiles that they end up still using today, strapped on the bottom of these aircraft, the remote control aircraft, and still using those today. And they were actually selling and shipping and moving them through my toy company. So anyhow, what the bottom line was, because I ended up supplying so much good information, the next following years, from actually for the last, now it's almost 25, 30 years, I had ended up being an investigative researcher, which dragged me into several congressional inquiries. I even had a couple of major investigations that were delivered to me by intelligence people, where they came in and said, here's files, Mr. Fletcher, you've got the contacts and you've been doing this and this and this. Can you take this and go in and do something with this? I've been unable to get anybody to look at it. And these were two or three, actually probably five different major investigations at the congressional and Senate levels.
And Bob, let me ask you just...
Go ahead. Sure. Yes, sir.
And then we'll get into your work, of course, on Nibiru. Sure. But why would they buy a small toy manufacturing company if they were supplying weapons outside of that? Was it a front? Is that what they were looking for?
Yeah. Yes, basically. And I found out later, apparently, a couple of years ahead of that, I had an international business consulting company. And my business partner was literally the consulate general for the country of Liberia. His name was Abraham Mosley. He was based out of Washington, D.C. And we had put together for the country of Liberia in the 80s, the earlier 80s, around 1980, 81, that period of time, we had been putting together major contracts for South America, Western African countries, included Liberia and Sierra Leone and Gabon and some of the small West African nations. And that I did that for a couple of years. We were putting together shrimping contracts for boats, boats to develop the shrimping there. And we were assisting in the government agencies in trying to put together better educational programs and library books and things of that sort. So it was strange, because my partner was, in fact, at a high level of the Liberian government. I must say this just because I think back now and I get a real kick out of it. When I would be contacting businesses to assist and trying to put together these variety of contracts at that time, there's nothing more impressive for which I was still a small business guy, to be able to give someone a business card and tell them they can call me in Atlanta, Georgia at my business location, or they can call me at the embassy in Washington, D.C. You know, and there's nothing that totally eliminates anybody's question about who you are, what you're doing, if you can say, you know, just call if I'm not at the one place, leave a message at the Liberian embassy in Washington, D.C. And of course, I was in and out of D.C. I'd met a lot of people. But see, unknown to myself, that little sequence, and I had on my wall, I kept for many years, this wonderful letter directly from the embassy welcoming me as a business entrepreneur into the nation of Liberia, you know, Monrovia, Liberia, and other nations of West Africa, and of course signed off all from the embassy. So it was a pretty elaborate piece of wall art for myself in the office. But the bottom line was, what I didn't know, apparently that had put up a red flag someplace along the way, and part of it also was because we were doing oil contracts and pursuing oil agreements in associated with some other Western African nations at the time. But apparently this fella, Gary Best, or the CIA or the National Security Agency, somebody obviously had picked up on that. And after that, matter of fact, we terminated that my business with Africa when they overthrew the country of Liberia. I mean, they literally cut the heads off of the people that we were have contracts with, which really slowed business down. And so I'm being facetious. It's not really very funny. But they'd actually killed several people that upon the overthrow of the government in approximately 1981 or whenever it was. Anyhow, when that happened, it appears that this fella's name, Gary Best, was the intelligent operative that has been supplying weapons for so many years with all the major generals that had run the old Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that were involved with Air America and all of that business that people are familiar with from the Mel Gibson motion picture.
Right. How in the world, though, did you make the transition from all of that to investigating Nibiru and Planet X?
Okay, that's a necessary question, I guess. The bottom line was, as I said, I ended up, because all these guys that are involved with this high-level supplying, what they call supplying of weapons or supplying of air power, et cetera, they're the same people and had been a hand-me-down group. It's kind of like the mafia, and then a couple of guys from one part of it are involved with a few people of another part, and they are the ones that are, in one way or another, connected hand-in-hand in all of what I would refer to the worst corruption out of government, including things like assassinations of President Kennedy and things of that sort. So I guess they all overlap. So what took place was during the early 80s, when I first became a sworn witness and became involved with it, senators, congressmen, intelligence agents, operatives, disgruntled whistleblowers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They were contacting me and dragging me into all these other inquiries at a congressional level that, in fact, were always connected, you know, to some of these same people. So I started doing, and I did an awful lot of it. We can't even get into all of it now. It takes a long, long time. It's very interesting, but it takes too much time. The bottom line was, a couple of years ago, it dawned on me, and I started investigating this unbelievable misdirection and the theft of giant money out of Washington. Not the multi-millions that I was used to chasing and in all these arms deals and different narcotics, fraudulent bank deals, things that senators and congressmen get involved with, unfortunately, all the time. But this was the loss of trillions that where the the head of the Defense Department, Rumsfeld, came forward and said, we can't locate $2.5 trillion out of the Defense Department. It's lost, which he announced the day before.
Hold on for a second, Bob. We're going to hit the break and come back and get into Nibiru in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Bob Fletcher with us as we talk about his work incoming, the only expose of the incoming of Nibiru. It's an incredible story. And if you missed us last half hour, Bob was leading up to what he has gone through in his career, in his life, which is now leading him up to this. And Bob, we'll let you finish this portion up where, you know, you've done all these things. You were basically you were chasing corruption in the government. And now you're working on Nibiru. Tell me about this transition.
Well, basically, as I started to mention a little earlier, we ended up chasing the money first off. It's that old thing, follow the money. Huge amounts of money vanished. So I realized after tapping back into old resources and even going back into some of my own files where I had people talk to me about underground facilities way back in the 90s, and one thing led to the other, and it became the connecting of the dots of politically, scientifically, financially, and every other thing that seems to affect us on a regular basis. It all went in one direction, and that was the realization that the mystery Planet X that had been talked about almost like a fable for so many generations, so many years, and of course, people that have done great amount, some folks that have spent their entire lives dedicated to studying all the old scriptures of all around the entire globe, going back 4,000, 2,000, 3,000 years, and the realization that Planet X was a real item, that it was genuinely in a huge, apparently a huge elliptical orbit, and was on its way back in. And that was, according to my information, it was discovered about 1983 in terms of being a discovery in Washington, D.C. by President Reagan and, of course, Vice President Bush, who was actually the president during Reagan's time, too. But the bottom line being that someone at that point in time came in and said that huge infrared telescopic satellite that we sent out to the fringes of the solar system has just broke everybody's bubble because the planet Nibiru, Planet X, does exist, and it appears that it's on its way back in. So sometime during that period of time in the early 80s, powers to be, so to speak, I refer to them as the bad guys or the shadow government, they sat back and they said, uh-oh, if this is real, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. How bad is it? When's it going to come? If it's coming in 100 years, we don't care. But we're talking in only 20, 30, 40 years that this is going to be coming back. And it is coming back. So I had studied a multitude of astronomers that have studied it. All of those research had been done. And I came to my own shocking conclusion that Planet X Nibiru is a reality. And the bottom line is the United States has built all these unbelievable underground facilities as survival facilities for the limited few that are going to be allowed in underground. Today's news that you even mentioned, talking about making movements with the equipment.
Oh, amazing story.
At the Cheyenne Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's in our DVD that we completed, of course, about 6 months ago. That's in our report. The bottom line is they moved stuff out of there about 2 years ago or a year and a half ago. And they made alterations and changes. They have just converted that into what amounts to being one of the primary out of 100 of them underground in the United States. That's going to be one of the primary hideaways. But it's interesting because what they're saying now is they're expanding it or building, putting in updated equipment, et cetera, because they had actually moved all of that out about a year and a half ago, and that's a part of that's in our DVD. But what has also happened since the last time we spoke, which is about, whatever, 4 or 5 months ago, I guess, last time I was talking with you about this, many things that I had, in fact, predicted in our DVD has, in fact, taken place. That is, of course, a tremendous increase in sky activity. What I mean by that is the planets starting out by Pluto and coming inward are all changing in the facial, the external chemistry structure. They're all heating up, and they're being aggravated by something. Some of these are has been going on now, you know, for about a year, but that's all. Actually, a lot of news releases on that. But the bottom line is, of course, it's not in the regular news. You have to kind of flip over the pages and roll over some rocks and look look around to find some of these actual news reports. So what we have is all the planets are being irritated by something. The sun now.
And people, people too are getting irritated, Bob, by something. I mean, it's well, bizarre, but something's happening.
Yes, and you know, it's easy when you get, you can fall into a trick bag when you do a study like I ended up doing, because ordinarily I wouldn't touch the planet X with a 50-foot pole, you know, because it was something rather fell into the fanciful direction. But when I got into the nuts and bolts of the politics, changing their entire space programs a few years ago, putting these underground facilities, filling them up with survival foods to the extent that the average guy had trouble buying that for the last 2 or 3 years, because the primary contracts were going to the government for all of the freeze-dried stuff mm-hmm. and what have you. The underground facilities we're talking about, and I have a list of them on my website, they're some of them are really huge. And then when I found out that in Russia in 2010, they put out a mandate to create 5,000 smaller underground facilities, which they did accomplish by 2015, by the beginning of this year. They've accomplished that. They have some of them are large, but a large quantity of are what we would call smaller facilities. Now, all at the same time, the things that, see, these are the dots that people couldn't figure out exactly what was going on, like supplying military weapons and equipment and buying billions with a B of bullets and to supply small weapons to all the sheriff's departments and the police departments around the country. And of course, troop carriers, hand grenade launchers, and things of that type into our police facilities. Everybody said, what's going on with that? Why are they buying so many weapons and bullets and machine guns and things of that sort that you could actually fight a war, a World War IV, a 3, 4, and 5? You know, it's an extraordinary amount of weapons.
FEMA just contacted one of my clients. They produce storable food, and they wanted to buy up the entire inventory, Bob.
Yes, and they have been doing that, see? And their target has not been that. These are the things that get really spooky when I got into this. You know, you can always say, well, they're doing it for this, or it's down the road, or they're worried about something else or what have you. And everything points to one thing, and that is an intergalactic, unbelievably serious event taking place. If the wealthiest elite of the world are digging holes for themselves to hide in and have been filling them with the foodstuffs like you're talking about, the foodstuffs for 5-6 years now, you couldn't buy them. You couldn't get enough because the contracts were all obligated to the government. And the reason for the they have now also something that's been banging around the internet like crazy, all right, is the upcoming planned exercise to take place. It's sort of a synthetic martial law that is to be done by all of the military sources cooperatively under Homeland Security sometime between June and September. And this is something that's slowly been coming out, and it has a name. I think it's, I don't have it in front of me. It's not something I, but it's a, you know, it's got a regular title for it at this point in time.
Okay.
It's called Helm something, whatever. I can't think of it at this point. But it is a real event that people are picking up on. Now, what this is, it's basically a dry run for martial law. And of course, again, everybody says, well, you know, why, what is it? I wonder what, you know, why would they even be doing this? Why are they practicing and educating the general police forces to handle this? What's the idea with that? Well, they're going to, here's, everybody asks, they say, when will the government tell us about the incoming of Nibiru?
It's called Operation Jade Helm 15.
Jade Helm, that's what it is. I couldn't think of it to save my life. And that is a dry run preliminary on martial law. The bottom line is this. The people that are in control at this point in time have their hands in our budget and can take and do what they wish with the money and have been creating hideouts for themselves underground, 103 of them, give or take, all right, they will never be able at any time come forward on the news and say, hey, we have bad news. A planet's going to come back around in a couple of months, and it's going to create complete global destruction like Noah's floods, which I believe Noah's floods was, in fact, Nibiru on one of its earlier passes.
And in order to keep government alive, we have decided to move underground, but you can't go.
Right. And the only way, I mean, if you just apply logic to this whole situation with buying the bullets and getting ready for martial law, going underground, changing the space administration, the whole thing has been changed in 20 years. And lying to us about all kinds of ridiculous reasons for buying equipment and things. When all of that, the bottom line is, if the people knew ahead of time, it would be complete global havoc and riots. There's no way to you that you can present this to the average person in a manner such it's going to keep them from not going completely out of control. So they're going to have to, at one point in time, the Planet X Nibiru is going to be visually seen on the horizon, up in the sky. It's going to be a new star. It will appear originally as a singular star. Even though it's a large planet, calculated to be five times the size of Earth, and carrying with it four or five moons that travels around it like its own little solar system itself. And additionally, of course, the unbelievable tail, like in the tail of a comet, like Halley's Comet, that has a 24 million mile tail. That's just a frozen snowball that comes around every 75 years. We have no idea how big the tail of space debris is going to be dragging behind Nibiru. And when it comes, we're going to travel through it at least twice when it comes in to go around the sun and then back out again. We will, under our regular orbit of going around the sun, we will, in fact, go through it twice. And going through that tail is going to be an experience that no one's going to want to...
And I suspect, Bob, we've gone through this before in earlier history of this planet.
That's correct. And I don't, again, I'm the messenger on this thing. I'm an expert in certain areas, predominantly corrupted politics, if you will. But I have the ability to put A, B, and C together. Sometimes you just have to get your prejudice set aside and just say, you know, I have to really look at this through clear glasses. What in the world would cause these people to stop stealing money for their own pocket and start building hideouts? And so, again, I tapped into those guys and organizations that have studied this thing for years and years, and a fellow named Gil Broussard is one gentleman that has a wonderful investigative research on this. And then, of course, Marshall Masters has been chasing this for many years.
Yep.
And the bottom line, what they've discovered, and many, many, many other people, including people that have been eliminated because they were high-level astronomers that were told to keep their mouths shut, and they are now deceased because they didn't keep their mouths shut. But the bottom line is, you're correct. It has been around. There is a debate between, let's say, Group 1 and Group 2 as to whether it's a 3,600-year elongated orbit, or if it is a lesser orbit of about 350 or 360 years. In that case, obviously, simple mathematics, that it would have been here 10 times in passing around close to the Earth, if in fact it's on a shorter orbit. But the agreement is, of course, the approximate date that has been calculated by these folks who have done extraordinary, some of the studies that gone back, you know, studying the, let's say, the Egyptian writings, the Tibetan monks on the top of the Himalayas, the writings that they've done, the emperors of the ancient Chinese, where they actually followed this thing. They called it the visiting star or the red dragon, and they actually followed it in their own scriptures and wrote these things down. And you can now, you can actually verify most of these events to be true and correct times. In other words, you can verify pretty much when it had passed. So the question was, and these guys, have, again, I'm not the astronomer. I don't pretend to be an astronomer, but I understand it. And the bottom line is that it has come by. It has been logged in the diaries of these ancient cultures, in the Bible. It's described in biblical writings. And the bottom line is that they it has come around, it's caused floods like Noah's floods, which was actually one of the passes.
Has it caused the winter we had in the Northeast this year?
The winter, absolutely. And that, see, I put that in our DVD, which, by the way, it's very large. It's a double DVD, 4 hours, because we did cover every aspect.
Four hours?
Involvement
and
all of it.
That's a long time.
Well, and then what we put in there, as a matter of fact, which is amazing, was I had just analyzed it, and I said the winter of 2015 that we've just been going through, I said it's going to be the craziest, the worst winter the United States had had in hundreds of years because of Nibiru. Now, we have today President Obama mentioned the fact in an interview with, I think it was CBS, a sit-down interview, he was talking about the climate change. Well, it's not basic. It's not because we were smoking too much. It's not because we had too many smokestacks coming out of the factories and all. The climate change is taking place because of Nibiru's effect.
Let's talk more about that. Hold on, Bob. We'll talk about that climate change effect. And we'll take phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.